my speakers on my Oculus are like playing this. How about that, huh? It just randomly decided that that's where it should go.
Oh, yes. Skype loves to change sound settings.
It's my computer in general, man. It's so terrible sometimes. Let's see. Microphones, speakers. Oh, here it is. Okay, test, test, test. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Yeah.
I can hear you guys.
Welcome, everyone. The hype train is well and truly at the station, and we are all hopping on board for episode 36 of the Player 2 Pixelcast. My name is Matt Hewson, and I will be in charge of this likely rather messy episode. Joining me are three fine fellows, all with their masters in BS. First is the P2 deputy editor, and someone who is working their way towards becoming Robocop, thanks to multiple surgeries, Stephen Del Prado.
Ahoy, hoy.
How are we, besides waiting for your next implant?
I'm all right. You know, pretty good. It's just a coincidence that I happen to have a lot of time off just before the release of The Last of Us Part 2, as I'm going to say. It wasn't planned.
Strongly encouraged, but not planned. All right, then. Next, we have a fellow that feels that the past is no place for gamers. The future is all that is important. Ken, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Sorry, I had to think about that for a little bit.
Well, we are talking future tonight, so I thought, you know, you're a man that likes new and shiny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, new and shiny is always better than old and shitty.
And finally, we have a chap that knows everybody is kung fu fighting, so he decided to become the master. Adam.
Master. Yeah. We'll keep on putting that out there. Maybe someone will believe it one day.
One day. I'm good, mate. I'm good. Well, you're the master at Ken. how's things?
Things are really good. It's actually been a busy week. And I was actually looking at releases over the next few weeks, and that actually just today I was looking at it, and that got me really excited. So I don't know about you guys, but when I see a lot of big titles coming out, it makes me excited. It makes me happy.
It's a surprisingly busy part of the year this year for new releases. Yeah. So filled in E3's gap nicely. But speaking of E3 and big events, tonight the plan was to talk about the PlayStation 5 reveal. That was our original idea, but unfortunately, due to world events, Sony's done the right thing and held off on their big reveal. So we're moving into speculation territory tonight instead. We're going to talk about what we think is coming, what will be their key points, you know, where we think they might struggle a little bit, and just generally make some probably uneducated guesses as to where Sony is heading from what we've seen and what's kind of leaked into the world. But first, we're going to talk about the games we've been playing. Stephen, in anticipation for perhaps this year's at least top five, it's in the top five of biggest games of the year, you've decided to binge on some Naughty Dog back catalogue titles. How's it going for you?
Pretty well. Pretty well. Obviously, it's a pretty weird thing to be spending quite a chunk of time playing a lot of last-gen games in the lead-up to so many big releases coming out. Obviously, it was part of Sony's strategy to not have proper backwards compatibility, which meant that you have some slightly better versions of PS3 games available in the form of Last of Us Remastered and the Uncharted Nathan Drake collection. So I've kind of been making my way through those. I wrapped up The Last of Us Remastered, and I've still got the Left Behind DLC to go between now and next Friday, and I just wrapped up Uncharted 3 and Uncharted 2 in that order.
In that order. So you went a bit backwards about things.
I did. For some reason, I thought I'd finished Uncharted 2 as a remastered version, but I hadn't. I'd only got to, like, two or three chapters in, and then I must have dropped it, and then I've gone back and I've thought, oh, I'm pretty sure I finished two, and I've done one, I'll play three again, because three is easily the Uncharted game that I've played the least outside of four and The Lost Legacy. Like, with 4 being so much longer than most of the other games and Lost Legacy being the most recent, I hadn't really gone back to play it. Like, 3 was the first game in the series where I immediately would normally play the game again, and I just had no desire to after I wrapped that game up when it came out on the PS3. So I thought I'd give it another chance, and obviously I needed to get some ammo to once and for all put Paul James in his place. Uncharted 2 is in fact the superior Uncharted game, especially on the PS3.
Yes, so, well, there's an argument for 4 overall, but...
Oh, yeah, I think when you bring 4 and The Lost Legacy into it, they're just a notch above, and I think a lot of that has to do with lessons they learned from 3 and moving into The Last of Us, and then, you know, learning their way around the PS4 by remastering The Last of Us, and then obviously they put all of that into Uncharted 4, which I'm planning to replay again, and I'm getting the impression I'm still going to think it's a tad too long. Whereas I thought The Last Legacy was beautiful. I'd love to see Naughty Dog do more of those sort of, you know, 10 to 15 hour kind of experiences in those worlds. I think it's short and sweet and doesn't overstay its welcome and is a blast to play through. So, Uncharted 3. As I said on Twitter, it's the Cars 2 of the Uncharted franchise. Like,
I didn't think it was that bad, but yeah.
I meant that in the sense that you could almost subtract it and go straight from 2 to 4, and you wouldn't really lose anything in the process, I don't think.
No.
Like, aside from some development of Nathan Drake and Sully's relationship and Nate getting back with Elena, which is a thing that obviously happened between 2 and 3, I think you could just completely gloss over that whole game and it wouldn't really matter too much. And especially with, you know, Paul's criticism in mind of, you know, 2 and trying to say that 3 is 2 but better, like, everything that people brought up that was an issue in 2 is still an issue in 2 when you go back and play it, but it has the benefit of being made years before 3 and doing it first. So, a crappy villain with a shitty boss fight. Oh, yep, it's in Uncharted 2, but guess what? They did it in Uncharted 3 again. Wow, a really cool, you know, jumping into different cars sequence. Yeah, they did that in Uncharted 2. They did it again in Uncharted 3 and made it a bit longer. Like, the train sequence in Uncharted 2 is not topped in Uncharted 3.
Yeah.
Like, the plane is a poor man's version of that. And it really feels... it really feels truncated in a lot of ways. Like, I think where Uncharted 2 can start to feel a little bit long in the tooth in those later chapters, like, it has so many of those, like, fake-out endings. Like, you think, oh, okay, this is where they're going to go, and they go to a different location.
Yeah.
Uncharted 3 sort of just, you're in the desert, and then the game ends. And it turns out they were trying to stop the tainted tap water supply from happening. It's just...
Wasn't that the story from the Clive Cussler movie? Zahara?
Well, I think I made reference to the Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode where they make Lethal Weapon 5, and it's all about Frank's character tainting the tap water in the town, and I'm like, that's literally the plot of Uncharted 3. Like, the McGuffin is going to, you know, poison everyone and give them freaky-deaky psychedelic visions. Like, it's just, it's weak. Like, it's weak, really weak.
And it's the only Uncharted game I haven't finished. Because I fell off and have no desire to go back.
And again, like this, like, I literally have notes here. I got notes. I need to put them into a proper form. But just, like, a couple of things. Like, the starting setup in London, first of all, London is a way less exciting place to start than a train hanging off the side of a fucking mountain in Tibet.
Yeah.
To start with. That in media res start of Uncharted 2 is brilliant. Whereas the Uncharted 3, like, fake-out of Drake and Sully getting shot, it just doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Like, so much of it is just underwhelming. The enemies are super bland. Like, it's British dudes in suits. I'm not saying Nathan Drake needs to only be shooting brown people, because let's be, like, honest, that's what he exclusively does in most of the other games. But, like, could you give the British guys a little bit more flair? And the weird thing is they have no reaction to being shot. It's almost like they forgot to punch some animations in.
Yeah.
Like, the cruise ship is honestly the highlight of that whole game and the only set piece that I was like, yep, I think this is legitimately cool.
Yeah.
Everything else is just kind of...
Just it, it felt to me that it was just very almost rushed. They felt like they needed to get a sequel out and it needed to have all the elements from 2 in it just in a different setting, and it never felt as cohesive.
Yeah, well, one of the things I've heard about the development is that unlike the other games, Uncharted 3 started by them coming up with the set pieces and then building everything around that.
And that didn't work.
And it kind of feels like that because it's just not as cohesive and just the locations aren't as exciting. It could just be me. I like snow and jungles more than I like desert.
Yeah.
But it felt a bit done by that point. And it wasn't enough of a departure from 2 in the same way that 4 is.
Yeah. 4 adds a lot to it. So.
And I don't wonder if... Obviously, I have to imagine that The Last of Us was in pre-production at that point, and if a lot of the team weren't sort of looking over it that longingly, like wanting to play with something new rather than the same old thing
they've been doing, yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, but the shooting into Uncharted 3 sucked at launch.
Yeah.
Like, they had to patch that thing in the PS3. It was so bad. And I think the port treats that as canon, like they fixed all of that stuff up. So it's not even an alternate aiming mode. It just is the aiming mode now.
Which is fair enough, too. All right, then. Well, we might move on from Naughty Dog's back catalogue and go to Ken and Adam, because you've both been playing what seems to be the hottest ticket in town. And that is Valorant.
Yeah. Well, Ken, over to you, Ken.
Oh, I mean, you said, Adam, that you've played probably like a couple hours, and I actually, to be honest, haven't played that much more than you. Probably about 4 or 5 full games at this point, and a couple of Spike Rushes, and a couple of games of Spike Rush. I mean, in a nutshell, really, it's Counter-Strike plus Overwatch. I mean, that's essentially it. And you're either excited by those two words coming together, or you're like, cannot be bothered.
Yeah,
right?
That's a good point. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. A lot of people have said this is Counter-Strike, specifically 1.6. I'm sure we can all remember back when that was a thing.
Yeah.
So the difference between 1.6 Source and then CSGO, there is actually quite a lot of differences. But I could see the 1.6 reference in how the guns operate, how they work. You have controlled recoil. What I did find out recently is that the spray pattern is not the same for each gun. It is at the start where like it'll go up, but if it goes left or right is random. And I went, and I'm like, oh, I did not know that. So that's actually a really good thing. It's like halfway between what Source was, where it was completely a random hitbox, versus the same spray pattern for each gun, and it'll never change. I really kind of like that, how it brings those two together. And of course, they said, you know, CS 1.6 plus Overwatch. And I really like what they did with the special abilities. They've managed to find that ability saying, like, hey, you all have the same guns. They all do the same things. And it is all about that chess game of, like, picking angles, getting to a spot, and how you feel like your opponents. But now giving, like, each character flair, and that alone adds diversity to the game. Yeah. I've been watching – I may have only played a couple of hours, but I've been watching countless hours of people playing this.
What I really like you said, Adam, is the watching the angles, watching the corners, and that was something I always felt that sort of missed a little bit with Overwatch. Just like that level of shooting, that level of precision was just lacking a little bit. And that's what Overwatch is. Like, it is a little bit more terrible use of terms, but noob friendly. Like, it is a little bit more the edges are not as sharp, you know.
It does. Like, this is actually where I got to back up a lot of Overwatch pros that I've watched play this game, and it's unfair to compare the two.
The reason for that
is because it's not about precision shooting. It's like, well, it is if you play Ashe or Widow. If you miss a shot with Widow because you didn't pick the right angle, they saw you coming, or you missed a couple of shots. That's over. The whole point is to get those shots, but it's very MOBA focused. So you have objectives, and it's all about the objective. where Overwatch is a completely different game is that you have this role-based situation going on. There's nothing Counter-Strike-y or shooty about playing Mercy or Moira or Lucio. But also, with those three characters, you can't play those three healers exactly the same way. They are so incredibly different. And where Overwatch really requires a lot of skills that you need to play these characters a lot to understand how they work. And even then, the high skill gap is still there. So, like, I know that I can walk in, and if someone said, like, oh, I've played, 100 games of Overwatch, I'll go, like, I am going to bury you in Overwatch. I am so confident that I can do that. And I always feel like a game that has a good ceiling will do that. Like, for example, someone who's played 1,000 hours in Counter-Strike, they're going to bury me. There's no ifs or buts. They're going to shoot me in the head. They're going to know how to do it. It's the same in Overwatch.
No, absolutely. But what I'm getting at is, like you said, like it is role-based. Like Overwatch is role-based. So you could spend a lot of that time focusing on supporting your teammates.
Yep.
Absolutely, the synergy between your character and the rest of the characters in your team. And you do have to think a little bit about that in Valorant as well. But the expectation in Valorant is the characters and the abilities are there to add extra flavor, but fundamentally it is still a shooter.
Yeah, like, I'm really interested to see where they go with it too.
Every person is expected to be a gunner. Like, everybody's a gunner.
Yep.
That's not necessarily so in Overwatch. You don't necessarily have to be a gunman in Overwatch. What I'm really enjoying about Valorant, it really feels old school Counter-Strike. Like, the maps just look and feel like some like DE dust or like all of that stuff, like double doors and corners and multiple entryways into big long areas where you've got a sniper on one end and everybody's just trying to like duck in and out and trying to like have a sniper match. Like, that's some really old school Counter-Strike. What I'm really also enjoying is the abilities are interesting. They don't take away from the game. Like, if you think about it, like you've got a healer. You've got somebody who can throw a wall up the way that Mei does in Overwatch. You've got somebody who can throw grenades and, throw around smoke grenades and also frag grenades and that sort of thing. So it's halfway between, in Counter-Strike where you would be buying a frag grenade or a smoke grenade or a flashbang.
Yep.
And also at the same time, you've got the abilities that lets you send drones in and also reveal, enemy placements and various things. There's a bunch of abilities that are there to counter the Counter-Strike-ness of it.
Yes, but not overshadowing it. But, I think but that's no, what but, you're getting at there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But not overshadow it. So, if you've got a sniper hiding behind a box, sniping at you down this long alleyway. You've got a hero called Breach who can just launch something through a wall and flashbang them. Like, you have things that counter other things that counter other things. And that's what I'm finding real interesting. One thing I'm not a fan of so far is that there's got like, there are four heroes with some type of smoke grenade ability.
Yeah.
So you've got like, okay, everybody's smoke is slightly different.
But they're virtually the same.
But they're virtually the same. Like, they all have the same radius. They all have this, like, and they all have the sort of the same area of effect. Different smoke grenades have slightly different sort of like time that it lasts. Mm-hmm. So I think Brimstone's one lasts the longest. But you've got like, four people who have got some type of smoke grenade or equivalent. And then you've got, I think, two different heroes who have got some type of flashbang equivalent. And like a bunch of others. Like, there are some abilities which are repetitive and some which are completely, unique to that hero, to that character. So that's the one thing I'm finding a little bit, like, off-putting is too strong a word, but it's just like, okay. These abilities, some of them are just frags and smoke grenades, and some of them are truly, truly unique. And they're all so situational that it's kind of hard to choose sometimes what it is you need or want in a game.
Yeah. And we're so early into the game, like you and I, like we're still figuring this out. And guess what? Even people who put 100 hours into this, yeah. and we know that many of those people exist, they're still figuring that out too. And yeah. It's very obvious that Riot are going to be making this their new FPS eSport. And I think when you see that come out, like what you'll see is you're going to see a lot of copycat stuff going on. And even when eSports start off and you get these teams and there's money to be won, they go like, oh, this team's winning. They're using strategy X. And everyone uses strategy X. Everyone who's like lower ranks, they see that and they go, let's use that. And then they get success with it. And everyone thinks that that's great until a new team comes along and they do some theory craft and they go, hang on, I think we can beat this with blah, blah, blah. Then the next tournament happens and they use this strategy to beat it. And it's like, oh my God, this is the new strategy. And then as you point out, you kind of come into this like, well, if it has like such finesse depth, what we're going to see is we're going to see this cat and mouse game between what's the best strategy, what counters what. And the more it goes on, the more you're going to know that. Overwatch is a prime example. Counter-Strike is a prime example. And, of course, fighting games, not to shoehorn that into this, but that is also a great example. Like, everyone uses that character.
These sort of games are tinkered with for years. So, by the developers, you know, while they find what works, what's overpowered, all that sort of stuff. Mm. And that information only comes to them through lots of playtime from the community. So, I mean, I expect that Valorant will be a very different beast 12 months from now to what it is now.
I was going to make a point. The last point I wanted to make is that it makes no, like I said, Counter-Strike plus Overwatch, and there's some parts of it that makes no bones about having Counter-Strike as its inspiration. Like, you've got a Desert Eagle. There is an AK-47 in the game. There is an MP5 in the game.
Did they just, like, cut
and paste? There's an AWP the weapons. There's a Scout. Like, there are the Scout with sniper rifles and the AWP. Like, it's just straight up, like, the weapons are straight up from
Counter-Strike. Yeah.
Nice.
There isn't a P50 equivalent yet, but I'm sure it'll come.
Yeah. All right, then we might leave Valorant there, but it is a free-to-play game, am I correct?
Yeah.
Is it through Steam or through a Riot launcher?
Riot Games.
Riot's
launch. Yeah. Yep, cool. All right, then. Well, so a few weeks ago we got the new Mafia 2 Definitive Edition, which I was lucky enough to review and thoroughly enjoyed my time with it again, and thought the upgrade was well worth diving into what is probably my favourite crime story in gaming. I think it's a very well done, Godfather-esque tale. And so I had a hankering for a bit more of that, so I went into Mafia 3 again. And now, Mafia 3 has problems, and people are aware of them. It tends to get rather repetitive. It kind of fell into that Ubisoft open world syndrome, creating stuff to do which really wasn't essential to the game, but you kind of had to anyway, and kind of filled it up with all this other stuff. But at its core, there's once again a really, really good story, and so I decided to give that another go, and there's been a whole bunch of updates added to it, and all the DLC is now free with it, because it became the Mafia 3 Definitive Edition, when Mafia 2 came out, as they planned the kind of whole trilogy re-release. And so I thought, good time to get into it, and then kind of America happened. So I was about 10 hours into Mafia 3, and then the race riots and protests over George Floyd's death and all that sort of stuff kicked off. And all of a sudden playing Mafia 3 felt a little bit harder, a little bit, it hit home a lot more. A lot of Mafia 3 is built around race. It's set in a fictional New Orleans in the late 60s, early 70s. It's a part of America that was very, very openly racist for a very, very, very long time, and still is considered where a lot of racial tensions tend to come from in that area. It's, I mean, that's not saying other areas don't have it, but you know, it's kind of that traditional home for things like the clan and stuff like that. And so playing this game, and there's a lot of elements of the game that are built around race. For example, in one of the areas, one of the kind of suburbs of this New Orleans is called The Hollow, which is predominantly black population, and the police response time to The Hollow is incredibly slow. So if you commit a crime in that area, there's a really, really good chance of you getting away without the police coming. However, if you do in, say, the Heights, where the rich folk live, the rich white folk live, the police are there in an instant and they're shooting to kill. So it kind of uses elements like that, I guess, to simulate some of these things that we hear about, and especially as pretty privileged people here. I mean, I certainly don't get any racial profiling, except, you know, I'm a big old white guy. That's my profile, and so no one ever says anything about it to me. But in Mafia, like, you're playing as a black man, you're playing as someone that, you know, was a soldier for the US and then came back and wasn't treated exceptionally well. And then, you know, the rich whiteys take everything they want from the Haitians and from the Cubans and from the African Americans that are all living in this city. And it really becomes a big part of this story. And, it's really interesting. And playing that now has made it, I guess, I'm not trying to make some grand connection between a game and what's happening in the world, but it's just that little bit rawer playing it and seeing this sort of stuff happen. And it's an odd thing to experience. Like, when I first played it, it was certainly noticeable, and it was certainly something that I took notice of. But, you know, I guess timing is sometimes a thing when you're playing a video game. You know, and beneath it, like, there's a really good story here of crime and betrayal and, you know, that sort of good story. It just happens to have a lot of focus around the racial tensions of the era and of that time. There's lots of talk on the radio about Martin Luther King's assassination and about how people are treated and how the police are, you know, treating the black community and the Hispanic community and all that sort of stuff. And it's all built into this game. And it makes me feel like they took a lot of time and a lot of respect in researching that, and going to the appropriate places to find out, you know, exactly kind of what was going on at the time. Obviously, it's always going to be a watered down, thing in a video game, but it seems very authentic. It seems almost a little bit eye-opening, just for that period. And then you go and watch the news and think, this shit's happening today and worse. And it's
50
rather,
years later, what's really changed?
Yeah, what's changed? It's kind of a bit depressing, if I'm completely honest. So, I mean, I think Mafia 3 is the sort of game that deserves to be played. It is not perfect by any means. And the new DLC actually kind of breaks up some of the monotony of the gameplay, with some new elements and some new interesting mission types and that. So there's a very cool new DLC where you're investigating this kind of almost cultish version of the clan that involves a bit of supernatural sort of mysticism. And you kind of start investigating these swamp folk that are clearly race haters, but also have a bit of, you know, kind of this, I guess, voodoo undertones or something like that. And it's this kind of creepy mystery side quest, and it works really well in the bayous and things like that. And then there's new activities and new driving mechanics and new shooting mechanics that mix things up a bit. So it's a more complete game now. The problems still exist in the repetition, but I think it's a story that's worth playing, and I'm glad they made it. I wish they'd fixed some other areas of it, but it's certainly, easy to recommend.
Say the same thing. Yeah, like, it's, I had a blast playing it, but you hit the nail on the head. Like, I really wish they had gone a step further with that definitive edition and honestly cut some stuff out. Like, I think it's been far enough away that they could say, yeah, look, a lot of that open world stuff was tacked on. It's just the Ubisoft collect-a-thon dots on a map that doesn't really add to what they were doing, especially with the story. And it's such a sharp contrast between the two parts. Like, you've got this really heavy story and, like, mechanics that tie in so well to the story that they're trying to tell politically as well, like not just an African-American, but an African-American Vietnam vet who is copping it for both of those things realistically.
Yeah.
So to then have all of this really heady content and then have all this weird side stuff that it really didn't feel like their heart was in it, but they needed to tick that box for the publisher, which I can totally get, especially at that time period. And I would hope we're starting to move away from that stuff, but Mafia 3 is one of the few games I've played where it would do better with less.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Mafia 2, playing Mafia 2 really close to it, was a prime example of that. The open world in Mafia 2 is literally there for the quiet moments. You drive around the city to your next mission, and that's it. That's the only interaction, really, you have with that open world. You might go and buy a new suit if you've got a bit of money or something like that, but that's it. Whereas Mafia 3, it felt the city needed to have stuff to do in it, and a lot of times that stuff is just repetitive, and it takes away from what the game is as a whole. I think if they'd have done it now, it'd be much more something almost along the lines of an Uncharted 4 would work much better, where you have these open world little sections and breaks in between the main story, because the real reason to play any of the Mafia games is that story. They do that exceptionally well, and anything else is kind of just a distraction from that. All right, then, we might leave it there. We're going to let Tim, our illustrious podcast editor, pick some beats for us to relax to, and then we'll be back to talk all things PlayStation 5. Stay with us. Tonight, the plan, as I said earlier, was to talk about the PlayStation 5 reveal and what was on show. But then, obviously, tragic events in the US have occurred, and the world rose up almost as one against the injustice. As a result, Sony did the right thing and delayed their announcement. It has, however, left us in the territory of speculation. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to speculate. So let's kick things off with, you know, what we think Sony's going to do right. We're going to start on the good. Ken, you got pulled out of the hat first of my completely random hat name generator.
That's not good.
There's no hats. It's a lie.
What do you think Sony's going to get right with the PlayStation 5, especially around the announcement? Like, what features are they going to come out swinging with that are going to impress the public?
I don't think it's an impress the public type of thing, but somewhere in the past week they slipped in a bit of news where all PS4 games starting from, was it next week onwards, have to be forward compatible with PS5?
July, I think.
Yeah.
If they're getting certification past a particular date in July.
And I think that is very clear signal that, at least to a consumer, that at some point, because it's the transition period is always a little bit painful when you're like, oh, which version of this game should I get? Should I wait for the PS3? I remember getting Destiny, the first Destiny, and it was riding right on the PS3, PS4,
crossover.
Crossover. And I can't remember. Did I buy them again?
Or was it? You had to. I don't think they gave you a free upgrade.
No, they did a $10 upgrade. Activision did all their games with a $10 upgrade.
That's right. They, you had to pay some money to upgrade it, which, you know, ultimately I was fine with. But being able to recognize, being able to, just being, knowing that games going forward from this period onwards will be forward compatible. I think previously on a couple of episodes, several episodes ago, we talked about what forward compatibility might mean and what it would look like. And I think this is one of those signals, that forward compatibility.
Excellent. All right, Adam, thoughts?
I got to back Ken up on that one. It's, I think that's the fact that they want people to keep on buying games, but I kind of feel like it'll also be like, hey, it'll just work with it. And it won't cost you $10. Like, yeah. They knew that, because that was not popular when they did that. And they know it was a mistake. And they have competition in the market. So out of the gate, if they come out and say, oh, you can play your PS4 games on the PS5, but it's going to cost you $10 to upgrade. And Microsoft saying, like, no, that shit's just going to work for free.
Well,
like,
see, the big difference I see with this, and it's hard not to talk about this particular feature, especially, and not mention Microsoft, because they've come so far with it. They've actually announced that all the games on the 360 that are backwards compatible will work. All the games that are on the original Xbox will work. All the games on the Xbox One will work. And most of them will not only work, but will get resolution improvements. They'll get frame rate improvements just natively. And the developers don't have to do anything at all to do that. That's something that's built into the Xbox.
And this will work too.
And your controllers will all work. So yes. To me, the Sony is almost... It seems almost reactionary to that announcement, and it's not as fully fleshed out, nowhere near as fully fleshed out. So I wonder if I mean, it's probably a small crowd that of people that are over both systems sufficiently enough to understand. But I think that will almost be like, hey, Sony, you might have dropped the ball there. Instead of being the pro consumer thing, you didn't do it as good as the other guy. So
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we'll definitely get to what they've done wrong later, because I will venture into that, and I have a list. But you're absolutely right. I don't think they're going to make that mistake. I think they're going to do pretty well, but they've waited to see what Microsoft were doing first, just so they can go, okay, that resonated with gamers. We need to do that too. I think the next big thing they're going to do, guys, is like, we're actually going to see like the proper design, the final design, the final specs, the final everything. It's like, this is what you're going to buy when the PS5 comes out. We haven't seen it yet. I want to see it. I've seen the Xbox. Absolutely. I've seen the XX. It looks good. But I want to see the PS5. I want to have something to compare it to. And I want to look at a design that makes you go, hey, that looks – I like that. I don't want to see just another, like, box. You know, I don't like – I just like the box.
And also, like, again, we've talked about this previously before, but Xbox and Microsoft have been laying the groundwork
for a long time.
For a very long time. And it's fair to say that you could make the argument, and it might be fair to say that Sony's doing a bit of catch up, but they are doing one thing right, and their one right might be a small proportion of what the other company is doing, but it's still a right.
It's still a right move.
I think they still both have reasons for doing what they're doing. Microsoft, you've got 1 to 3 sales compared to Sony, so they absolutely lost this generation big time.
Big time.
But by having Game Pass, that is why they're so dead set on that backwards compatibility, because that's an instant sell for, here's your instant game library, you've got every Xbox One title. I don't think they're as big on the 360 and One titles as they appear to be. Everything I've seen before in the past when companies talk about backwards compatibility is that it's like, it's really only the squeaky wheels that care about that stuff. Your general consumer does not give a shit if they can play two decade old games. And Ken will back me up on that one. But
I think what Microsoft have been laying the groundwork for is to have everything run on the same sort of shell.
It's the ecosystem.
Like, it's the ecosystem, the entire thing.
Building
like,
that up.
It doesn't matter. You're right. It doesn't matter about the 360 games or the original Xbox games, but having everything on the same Windows-esque Windows box. It's essentially a Windows box now. It's just a...
And I posit that the reason Sony isn't super keen on that is because they love those distinct hardware generations. They love the idea of reselling you stuff you've already bought before, which we've seen in the past. And they're between a rock and a hard place with the Cell processor because they can't emulate that shit.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're sure as hell not paying to port all of that stuff over to the PS5. So they've really just thrown the ball in the developer's court and said, hey, you need to make this shit work with our new console. And what that's going to look like is, I think, really going to vary on a publisher/developer case-by-case basis. Some of them, like the first parties and the second parties, will go ahead and make that stuff sing on the PlayStation 5, and I think the third parties will get it to work.
Yeah. Because there's no incentive for them to.
No. What incentive is there? The PS4 has the incentive because it's got a 3-to-1 user base.
Yeah.
But the PS5 is unproven, and I think it'll be the case where if it does take off and it does end up being, you know, the number one console this generation, then that's when the third party will say, you know what, we will go back and make sure all this stuff is nice and polished on the PS5. But if Microsoft's doing it for you in the background,
yeah,
what is there to stress about?
Yeah,
you get your Game Pass.
See, I also think it's the nature of the two companies come into play a lot here in their decisions. Microsoft is first and foremost a software company. It has been always a software company. Sony, first and foremost, is a hardware company. It has always been a hardware company. It sold TVs, it sold DVD players, and, you know, that was their business. So the attitudes towards gaming is very different for those two kind of focuses. Microsoft's very much about the software. The software is what they want people to lock in with, whereas Sony very much want people to lock in with the hardware. Microsoft don't care what box they're playing on as long as they're playing the Microsoft system. Sony wants you to play their latest and greatest hardware because that's their kind of point of difference. That's their selling point. So I think the hardware announcements for Sony need to be the big sellers for them. In the last gen, they really were. It helped that Xbox fumbled the ball completely. But Sony had a very clear message. They came out. It was the most powerful system at the time. It came out. They could clearly demonstrate that. They had a, you know, track record of great first party games. They focused solely on games. Microsoft lost themselves in the mud of entertainment box versus gaming. And that was some poor leadership at the time, and those leaders have since been resold as a result. And they're much obviously clearer focus now. But I think with Sony's not going to depart from that tactic that they use. They're going to come out and say, hey, here's the Sony. And this is why, because we've got all these first party games coming to Sony, and that's why you want to buy it, because our first party games rock. And that's going to be their message.
And I think with the hardware stuff as well, what they have revealed so far really drives that point home, like the hard drive speed being double that of the Xbox and even ahead of what most high-end PCs are capable of at this point. The stuff they're doing for audio engineers and, you know, the sound points of difference they're making, as well as the changes they made to the controller, they really want you to leave the old stuff behind and see what the new hotness
new
is.
New is, yeah. Uh-huh. And I think that will do really well, or it will miss the mark completely. I don't think there's a middle ground with this strategy.
You've got to take into consideration with hardware talk as well. Like, let's be very real. There is so much marketing guff out there.
Oh, yeah.
You can just put a terabyte here, a gigaflop there, and people go, oh, my God. So it doesn't work that well anymore. We know it's bullshit. Most people are pretty savvy now, like, with stuff. So if you can tell me that your IOs on your hard drive are better, it's like, that's actually really good. But what does that mean? Because the game's not reading – like, the game's reading a bunch, but it also buffers a lot in memory. And the reason that we does that is because now it's going to be measured in nanoseconds as opposed to milliseconds. So what does having high I.O. actually mean to me? Guys, spoiler, not much.
Well, I mean, any increase in speed is great, but...
It is, you're right.
I think a lot of Sony's features are... They sound amazing. Don't get me wrong. The hard drive speed sounds amazing. The audio stuff sounds super cool.
It does.
But I think first parties are the only ones that are going to use that. I think, unless, like, Sony again leaps to a massive lead, I don't think the effort that third parties are going to need to put into this stuff to use it properly is going to be worth it for them, at least in the first 18 months.
I mean, if we look at their current track record, most of the time, if you're playing on the PS4 Pro to the Xbox One X, it's generally one is native 4K, the other is checkerboarding or dynamic res.
Yeah.
And maybe it's got a, it holds a steadier frame rate, or it can do a higher frame rate. Generally, not even that. Like, it's just, oh, the Xbox One X doesn't drop frames as often.
Yeah.
And, like, that makes sense because, like I said, for third-party devs, it's not worth it to go out of their way to take advantage of all that stuff unless you have a 3-to-1 sales lead.
Yes.
And even then, they still don't embrace it as much.
No.
And the next part being that honestly, most consumers don't have the hardware necessary to take advantage of it. 4K, full HDR TVs, not as many people own them as I'm sure developers would like. And sound system, forget about it. Most people either have a set of stereo headphones or the sound's coming out of their TV.
Yeah. It is. It's an odd situation, isn't it? They cater for the... Well, I mean, guess what, that's what launches are about, though. They want the high-end consumer initially.
Well, yeah, that's the, you know, the people...
You know, that's the pitch, yeah.
Oh, you've got an 8K TV, why not buy a Xbox Series X?
Yeah, yeah, that's the sort of thing, you know. So with Sony, back to Sony being doing some good stuff, I think their lead, like I said, is going to be games, and I think they're going to come out with a couple of heavy hitters. And Sony aren't afraid to show off games that are a fair way down the track either.
Yeah.
So... they've done that in the past, so I think we might see some kind of, you know, 3 or 4 year away games, but, you know, it'll be that kind of reminder that, hey, God of War's coming, or Gran Turismo 7 or whatever they're up to, or, you know, that sort of thing. So I think that's going to be the big focus.
On that point, Matt, they're also not afraid to say this is coming out in 2 years, but then it doesn't come out for 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. So...
oh, God, isn't that the truth?
Yes, yes. Well, I still remember that. It was 2016, that E3, they absolutely blew everyone out of the water with Final Fantasy and The Last of Us Part 2. And
so many of their titles. Days Gone got delayed over and over again. Dreams was getting delayed over and over again. Like, Sony are not afraid to push stuff back, but once they say it's coming out in 18 months or 24 months and you buy that box, guess what? You bought that box.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yep. But I think they're going to have good launch titles. I think Horizon's probably a likely one.
I think they have to.
Like, and I think Spider-Man is a possibility as well. Ooh. Because a lot of Spider-Man's already built. Like, Spider-Man is always in New York. There is no reason to change that. So
you think it'd just be sort of a scale-up and make more content?
It almost... Like, I have no doubt Insomniac are very talented developers, so I think they'll change it enough to make it worthy of being a sequel. But, you know, that solid groundwork for it is already there, so that cuts development time. So they don't have to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. So I think Spider-Man is a possibility for launch, or at least, you know, 12 months sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it'll be that, you know, how they always say launch window, which,
yeah,
depending on who it is anywhere from 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Ken, anything else do you reckon's coming? That's going to be awesome.
That's a big sigh that I just made there.
Well, I think he's got more to say in the next section.
No, I don't know. Like, I mean, and this is where I don't know. I don't know because my gaming habits are very different nowadays. Gone are the days where I sit in front of the TV for hours and hours just smashing away at a game. It's now done in bits and pieces in between chores and other things to do and slipping in a bit of YouTube and Netflix. So it's not, how do I say this? Like, this is, I wonder when the Xbox One was announced those many years ago and they wanted to be the one box, where everything went through and that would be your thing. Like, that is actually how I'm seeing, that is actually how I'm using my PC nowadays, like the one box. And maybe they were just 6 years too early, seven years too early.
I think Xbox were really early on a lot of things there, but a lot of it's come true in a different sort of way.
In a different sort of way.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? I think they were on the right track
they were selling it the wrong way. The right idea. They had those right ideas. They were just way too early. And and I don't know if I'll be satisfied with just a game console.
And I think that's what PlayStation's going to give you. I think it's just going to be a game. And they've always done that. You know, they've always had that
absolutely
focus.
And I just don't
know. Not as much as Nintendo, but
But Nintendo's slightly different. Nintendo's its own thing. Like, Nintendo is you have to get a Nintendo to play Nintendo. Like, that's something else. But with one of the big boxes, like the big power boxes, the powerhouses, I don't know if, like, on face value, everything that PlayStation's talking about, the teraflops and the whatevers and the whatevers, whether that fits my gaming habits anymore. Mm. And so I don't know what else. Like, we've already said this. It's like, they're coming out with the power. They're coming out with the hard drives. They're coming out with the audio. It's like, that's nice. But like Adam said, I've got the one TV. It's not. Like, it's not. It's an 8-year-old TV at this point.
It doesn't slot into your lifestyle.
It does not slot into my lifestyle.
And that's going to feed into what Matt said. So, like, if we already got other devices that are doing all that, it's like, yeah, it's great that you can do all these other cool things, but, like, really, it's going to come down to those games. That's why Nintendo's still a driving force in the console market, because it always has Nintendo games. Always.
Yeah. And Sony do that, I think. They've certainly got a formula. There's a lot of similarities in all of their games, and I've said that before. That it's I was talking to Stephen about this before. I compare it to ribs. I really like ribs. I love ribs. Ribs
I
are
love
great,
ribs.
But I don't want ribs for every meal. You know,
do we?
I like a lot of ribs.
And when you say ribs, you mean third person action games, yeah?
Yes, that's correct. You know, so I think it. I'd like to see some more variants. Like, Sony has some varied titles in their first party, but they're not the things that sell. Like, they've got Dreams, and they've got littler things like Concrete Genie and some older remakes like Shadow of Colossus and things like that that are a bit different. But they're not what's selling consoles.
That could be a good challenge. Name a PlayStation AAA exclusive that's not a third-person action game.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, what was it? Killzone was the last one, and it was a first-person shooter. So,
I'm struggling.
Like, it's a thing, you know, and they're really good at it. They're the best in the business at third-person action games. There is no doubt of that. But yeah, it'd be nice to see, I guess, a little variance from their first party.
Interesting you bring up Killzone, because what did they make Guerrilla make next?
A third-person action
game. That's exactly what I thought of Horizon. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a situation, and like, it's really hard to be upset at them for making super high quality games, but at the same
especially
time,
especially if they made Horizon.
Yeah, well, you know, these are quality titles. All of them are super good, and God of War and Horizon are probably two games that I have enjoyed almost. It'd be in my top five for this generation. Those two games, easily. You know, they're really good games, and then Uncharted's always good, and Last of Us. Is, you know, the original's really good, and I'm not saying anything about the second one yet because I'm not allowed to, they do that really well, but I think there needs to be more room. They can't rely solely on third parties to provide variety, because if the worst case happens, and, you know, and if this is a really competitive console generation, which I have a feeling it's going to be,
We talked about previously about those big exclusive titles coming in waves.
Yeah.
And the first wave is generally like 2 years in, and the next wave is anywhere from 4 to 6 years in. And with those new developers that Microsoft have brought on board, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that stuff rolls out.
Yeah, I think with the way Microsoft are approaching things with these very unique developers, and from all reports and listening to interviews with people like Tim Schafer and stuff like that, they've essentially been allowed to continue being themselves. Microsoft have sort of come in, secured up their finances and said, we bought you because this is what you do, so do what you do. Which is awesome. And it's, once again, a complete change of attitude from the Don Matrick era, where they bought Rare and turned them into a Kinect developer. So yeah, I think that's going to be really interesting. So you're going to have a lot of varied and different and slightly odd titles from these developers in Microsoft. You know, Double Fine are known for making odd things. In Exile make very cool but kind of niche computer RPGs, the old school side of things. Obsidian do all sorts of stuff, but it's generally RPG focused.
Ninja Theory,
well, God knows what they're going to do. You know, apart from Hellblade, which I cannot wait for. I've watched that trailer about 100 times. But yeah, so you've got these differences. Now, whether it all sticks and whether it's all good, I don't know. But at least there's, you know, there's a lot of variety there. When I look at Sony, I say, hey, third person action games. Yes.
So here's a question then. In addition to the battle of the first parties, is this going to be a battle of the subscription services?
Oh, absolutely.
I think it will, but I think that Sony have already lost it.
It's a massacre.
Yeah.
Microsoft is just going to massacre Sony.
Because Microsoft have the computer market, so that's something that Microsoft are doing well, and they started with the Xbox One. We've already seen it, where you can have cross-buy. You own it on the console, Xbox One. You can also own it on your PC, and that's absolutely fine by them. And they will happily do that. They've already started. It's already launched. I've got it open now. They're the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate Edition.
I use it all the time.
Games here that I'm looking at right now, all of them there, they're also on my Xbox.
They like, play anywhere.
What's Sony going to do? Like, are they going to release their own OS? No.
They need to add value or drop price.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly it. And they could possibly do that. I'm hoping to be wowed by it, but... I think it'll be a common factor, but I don't think it's going to be a competition.
Sony haven't even launched PS Now in Australia.
They won't. How could they? Like, Stadia's never coming here. It's probably not lasting.
Well, no, PS Now does do downloads, though. It does do downloads. Now.
Oh, it does do so there's local stuff stored.
There's local stuff stored. Only limited selection, and it's nowhere near as competent as what... But, you know, also, once again, we're talking about different style companies. Microsoft was set up to do this by their nature. They've got server farms all around the world, and they've got all this unlimited space they can just do whatever the hell they want with, whereas Sony has to buy that. And they're buying it from, funnily enough, Microsoft. So the Sony PSN is moving to Azure servers next year.
Microsoft, the different arms of Microsoft will sell you whatever it is you want.
Yep, absolutely.
They will absolutely sell you whatever there's. They would happily sell you Minecraft and put as much Minecraft on everything as they possibly can.
100%.
They want to be. And this is where, again, this is where 6-7 years ago, we're like, what are you doing, Microsoft, being like the one thing on everything? You want to be the one thing on everybody's box? Like, no. Now you've just got 1,200 fingers in 15,000 pies, like.
Yeah. And they're bringing it all together. Like, that's something they do. And they've always done it pretty well, is, you know, bring the different arms of Microsoft together to work together. So it makes them. And it's funny because we're talking about, like, these two approaches. One is very forward focused, and one's very traditional. And I honestly can't say which is going to beat the other, with if any of them will beat the other, if one's better than another, you know.
I mean, if nothing else, just this current console will prove to you that being forward planning does not necessarily win you the current round.
Like, correct.
Yeah.
I think it's also hard as well, like where you are in the previous generation. Obviously, Microsoft did a lot of forward thinking because they reached that point where they just stopped releasing sales numbers. Like, they knew.
Yeah.
They knew what was going on, and then they, you know, could then focus their attention to that next round, whereas Sony's, you know, on top, and they're trying to juggle that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I find that sort of stuff fascinating, and to kind of try and guess how people are thinking. And, you know, we can make educated guesses, but unless we're sitting in the boardroom, we don't really know. I mean, it all comes down to money and what they think is going to make them the most. That's the down and dirty of it all. And Sony feel they're on a formula, and I don't think they're going to necessarily stray from that formula too much. It's going to be, you know.
How many people can they keep going into next generation? Can they keep those 110 million people?
Yep.
Or are a lot of those people going to jump ship? Because clearly a lot of them jumped ship from the Xbox last generation.
Yep.
So can they maintain that streak?
I'm hearing a lot of like just general chitter chatter about that. It's getting really hard to deny the value of Game Pass.
Like, I think if you've got a lot of family members and you don't want to be spending lots of money on games every, and you don't really need to have the latest releases every time, because it's like with Microsoft, it's going to be the third parties. You're not going to get Valhalla day one to play on your Xbox. You're going to be buying that from Ubisoft. But Forza, Horizon, Gears, Halo, all of that stuff, like, you're going to be able to play that day one. And that's a massive value add.
Yeah. And all their 13 new developers that they've got.
Yeah. Yep, so, absolutely. And that's why I wanted to, so that's why I brought it up as a subscription service, because game people like Obsidian and In Exile, they are putting their games currently on Game Pass already.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, you can get Pillars of Eternity right now.
Yep. You can get Wasteland 2, you can get Outer Worlds.
Outer Worlds. You're already here. It's already you're already ready set up for Wasteland 3 if you wanted to. Like, you could. Like, it's just.
It is a mind-boggling value for money proposition, the Game Pass, to be honest.
The thing that'll become really interesting is when they start to really curate things heavily in prep for those bigger launches. So when they've got a big title coming out, suddenly you see things along that vein disappear from Game Pass. Like, no, you can't play Fallout New Vegas or The Outer Worlds because we want you playing the new...
They've already said that first-party games will always be on there.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, they've come out and said, so the Halo, when Halo Infinite comes out, Halo 5 and the Master Chief Collection will stay, always.
Do you think it'd be, if they do end up with any third-party stuff on there, that'll be the stuff that rotates
The third-party stuff is the stuff that rotates.
Rotates. And it's currently already rotating. It already is. Like, things come in and things go out on a...
Like, Grand Theft Auto was there, 5, and then it got rotated out for Red Dead, you know.
But, so, all right, coming back to this, like, that's why I said when I'm looking at the PlayStation 5, it doesn't fit into my lifestyle. It doesn't fit into my gaming habits, because ultimately it's just a box that does one thing. And again, I hate to have to come back to this, but games as a service, like, that's kind of where that's kind of where I need things to be for me. Like, I need to be able to access these things at a time that's convenient to me, in a format that's convenient to me, delivered in a way that's convenient to me.
Yeah.
There are no more running to JB on launch day. There's no lining up at EB for midnight launches. There's no, like, digging through when EB has their sale, or trading in, or that sort of thing. Like, that just does not fit into my, the more I'm looking at it, like, it doesn't matter to me that you've got audio and whatever thing. I'm like, that's fine. I've never had an audio system, ever.
Do you have a Switch, Ken?
So, yeah, I do.
So, and do you find that is able to fit in with your lifestyle much better than your traditional TV consoles?
Yeah, a little bit. But even then, it's gathering a lot more dust than my PC is.
If you could stream your PC to your Switch, would that be something that really exciting to you?
Oh my God, yes.
And I think I wouldn't be surprised if that's some sort of functionality that... Nintendo have to look at.
Well, I think xCloud is going to do that with your phone, and then it's going to do it with your phone. So if you've got a decent sized phone, you just need an Xbox controller, it'll pick it up, and then you can stream xCloud to your phone
onto your phone.
Yep. So it's quite a cool initiative. Sony's done that too, though. You can do that with Sony PlayStation now. So yeah.
How do we feel about price?
I was going
to
mention
a better time to get into the next part.
It's going to cost $999.
And you'll have to get a second job to buy it.
Yeah.
I think 800 minimum.
I was going to say, even just looking at the exchange rate at the moment, Sony and analysts have ballparked $5 to $5.50 US, which is roughly $7.20 to $7.90. I really think $7.99 is the minimum they hit. I wouldn't be surprised if it's $8.49, but I really think Sony is waiting to see what Microsoft does on this one, because if Sony goes first, Microsoft will undercut them. That's just what's going to happen.
Well, I think Microsoft will undercut them anyway.
What was the highest price you've seen PlayStations go for?
$9.99 when they released the 3.
Yeah.
PlayStation 3, yeah.
How much was it?
And that was a massive mistake for them.
It was $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't see it being lower than $800 at all. And I think we were going to see the price and pre-order details at the reveal.
Well, you can go and register interest now at EB and JB. They will only do it in person. I tried calling them because I'm like, my back's stuffed, man. I can't make it into a story. It's like, sorry, we're only doing it in store, which says to me, they're doing allocations. Like,
they're going to get limited numbers.
Be limited stock, and they need
to know. I've got to get down there and do it.
I'm going to try to do it tomorrow because they need to know what stores it has to go to.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's going to be super limited, especially for the PlayStation, this release. I don't think Microsoft have got too much to worry about release numbers, but I think PlayStation, just because of the nature of what coronavirus did to manufacturing and things like that, I think it's going to restrict their ability to manufacture, whereas Microsoft have, you know, India, they have Taiwan, they have a whole bunch of places as well as China that are doing manufacturing, whereas Sony has to just is solely in China.
I think in the current economic climate, they know their sales are going to be soft. So why manufacture millions more boxes at the highest cost of manufacture they're ever going to be in their lifetime?
Yeah.
Rather than just put it off 12 months, you can streamline a couple of things, get the cost down, and not necessarily pass that saving on to consumers, but make a bit more money off every box, if any. Because traditionally, like I know with the 4, I'm pretty sure they were losing money or breaking even on that one. Like, it's only Nintendo that ever makes money on hardware.
Yeah. It's usually true. How it goes is usually by the end of the life, the consoles are making money, but initially they're either kind of thereabouts or at a loss, you know. I think that's going to be the case here. And I think
you guys want to hear something as well. Like the PS3 on launch for $1,000 was still selling at a loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because there's some PS2 inside it, Adam.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
What? You talk about Sony being terrible at backwards compatibility. Their solution on the PS3 was to literally put a PlayStation 2 in the PS3.
Oh, it is so true. So true.
So, I think price isn't going to be pretty for Australians at all, which is unfortunate. You might want to start saving now, folks, if you are keen.
Got my JB Hi-Fi gift cards sitting there. I just need to get my ass to a JB Hi-Fi.
I'm the type of guy that likes to lay by these things, so a pre-order works well for me. I just go down and lay by a bit off and you know, that over a long time, and it's not so nasty. Tell the in-laws that, hey, my birthday's coming up. Why don't you just pop down to EB and slap a couple of pineapples on that bad boy, yay.
I gotta do that one.
So, I think it's going to be pretty pricey. What do we think we're going to see at launch? Like, there's always eight to ten launch titles, probably three or four biggies. What do we reckon? Like, I think Horizon's a gimme. I think
Horizon is there. I wouldn't be surprised if it's more, and I've said this before, like a Lost Legacy size thing, like not necessarily a full-blown sequel, but a pretty sizable stopgap that will give us enough of a taste to tide us over for another 2 years until they can fully get that out.
Okay. Anything else? We're going to see GT?
No.
No.
I think they need to give up on that franchise, man. It's garbage. Like, no matter what Sony do, Forza and Forza Horizon have them completely over a barrel in terms of driving games and have captured so much of that market.
Yeah, it really is. But I think, I mean, there's a lot of prestige to the Gran Turismo name for good reason, but
I think there is, but I don't think you're getting those sales as much anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think Sony's probably looking at the value of that and saying, well, it hasn't really paid off for us in two generations, like.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, by the time, was it 7? Is 7 the next one?
7's the next one,
on the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation 4, like, GT was not setting the sales charts on fire at all.
No. And between the previous GT and the next GT, like, four Forza games have already come out.
Yeah.
And have sold, like, gangbusters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, and the tactic of having the serious Forza Motorsport followed by the, I guess, the more Horizon. Welcoming Horizon, yeah. Is a really good one, you know. It covers all bases.
I wonder if, and I'm completely just pulling this out of nowhere, I wonder if the next Call of Duty will be in time. It's been a while since a proper Call of Duty game is out.
Oh, it'll be out.
I think it'll be on both.
Yeah.
Maybe in a pack or something like
that. Yeah, I was going to say, like, something special for the PlayStation.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
The last couple of CODs have always had something special on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
And where COD used to be an Xbox platform thing, it's now turned into a PlayStation.
Well, I think the rumors are it's going to be a Black Ops game. So there could be the Black Ops Remastered with it, like they did with Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered. Not the Call of Duty Modern Warfare that came out last year, but the Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered. Because it all gets nice and confusing when we're talking about our Call of Duties.
Call of Duty Black Ops 4 Advanced Warfare in the past.
Yes.
What?
I
love them, though. I play them. So,
yeah. You know, Call of Duty Black Ops have kind of had the soft spot for me because they're mental. They're absolutely
they're nuts,
and it's like they've been let loose and go, yeah, the last...
Zombies. How good are zombies still?
The last one with a story was this Matrix bullshit. I don't know what was going on. I have no idea what happened, but it was fun. And yeah, it had the guy from Law and Order in it. And he's the guy from Wet Hot American Summer that has sex with the fridge. But yeah.
I think some sort of JRPG.
Yeah.
Something to hit that Japanese market.
Yep.
Like a Musou game. I think
game. Something that's very much more towards those tastes.
Like a Dynasty Warriors or maybe something more Square Enix-ish.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Wouldn't surprise me
honest.
Either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I think they're going to struggle, to be honest, to get 10 titles.
Well, it's just those timelines. Like, they've got so many of their biggest studios still pumping out stuff well into the tail end of this generation.
Yep.
That how could they possibly have had time to spin stuff up for the PS5 unless they've split off into multiple teams?
Yep.
Like, Naughty Dog could have something if they've got a second team, but I don't know if they do.
I don't think they would, especially being so close to The Last of Us Part 2. And they'll want to ride that. They might come to the launch and say, hey, here's the fancy pro update for Last of Us Part 2 on the PS5.
Get several extra pixels.
And you'll get, you know, maybe some DLC or something.
Awesome.
Yeah. But something like that, you know, might come from Naughty Dog. But I think they're going to rely a bit on third parties. And
do you think there's a surprise FromSoft announcement? And I don't just mean the rumored Blue Point.
There could be a Bloodborne 2. Yeah, I think it's probably about time right for Bloodborne 2. And that'd be a big seller.
Because the only thing that throws me off about that is Elden Ring being cross-platform.
Yeah, but, I mean, Elden Ring, it's being written by George R. R. Martin, so it's not going to come out for another 10 years, so...
The first half of the game will be really good, and then the rest of it won't have much of a story.
So it's never coming out. Let's face it, that guy's one meatball sub sandwich away from a heart attack, so he's never going to finish anything ever again.
That's a little harsh, but I'm just like, that's fair.
Like,
it's
an old guy. He's an old guy. He's a big guy. Like, if you were a heart doctor, you'd say, come on, mate. You know.
Well, I think this is the problem. Like, he's made stacks of money, and he didn't have to finish the job.
Yeah. He's like every tradie ever.
So, like, it's really hard. You're like, oh, I could sit here and write a few pages, or I could enjoy my life.
Yeah. Or I could live it up. But yeah.
But yeah, like,
Bloodborne 2 is a possibility. Yeah, that's
Paul and I talked about this in terms of like trying to track back through all the Sony first party stuff and make a timeline of what is feasible. And it really feels like Guerrilla are one of the few in the position to knock something out. They will have had, you know, 3 years at this point to get something up. Obviously, God of War 2 is a couple of years away.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, like the idea you laid out for Spider-Man, that does sound pretty feasible given the setting. Like they could do something like that. Or, again, it could be like my idea about Horizon. They've got a little stopgap.
Yeah.
Thing, so maybe it's like a smaller, more contained thing. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if the only thing I could see Naughty Dog doing, if they were doing anything, would be like a smaller Uncharted title similar to the Lost Legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. With the new character, maybe Nathan's daughter or whatever.
Or even like Young Sully. Give me Young Sully. I'd be happy with that.
It's... Yeah. That could work.
Give or Naughty Elena. Dog. Like,
That was fine.
Give Naughty Dog the...
More Chloe, less Elena.
Indiana Jones license and just be done with it.
Yeah. But I'm just trying to think of other first-party stuff that lines up and...
Yeah.
Like it...
Knack 3.
Oh, yeah, Mark Cerny's programming it himself. It's all going
to
be done.
Yeah, it's to be done. Knack 3. Knack 2 actually wasn't bad. Knack 1 was terrible.
Because they had that store error.
Yeah, and everyone got it for free.
Oh, actually, we didn't touch. PSVR, do you think that will live on?
I think the interesting thing about that is that obviously it doesn't hold a candle to a lot of PC VR sets, but from my understanding is the headset hardware itself is fairly solid. So once it's got a lot more power going to it, it will be able to display much better images. The thing that's going to really hold them back at this point is
wise.
The fact that they're still relying on that PS Move tech.
Yeah. I think, too, with the PSVR, I mean, that's already evident. You use a PSVR on a standard PlayStation and then compare that to the Pro. I think that's the biggest difference the Pro provides in all of PlayStation's products is the difference between the PSVR games. There are significant differences. I was watching my boys play on their PlayStation the VR stuff, even something simple-ish like Beat Saber is quite a bit rougher on the standard PlayStation compared to the PlayStation Pro. So I think there's certainly some truth to that, the VR headset being, you know, somewhat a slave to the hardware powering it at the base end.
It's about the frame rate. So, like, the best way I can ever explain it is like, if you have a 2K image coming at you on a computer screen and your GPU can handle that pretty well, run it at 100 frames per second, that's great. Well, okay, now you've got to times it by two because it has to go to each eye, and each one's independent from each other. That's how it gets the 3D effect.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, like, if it's not in sync or anything like that, then it won't work. So it always has to be consistent, but that's really doubling whatever the screen is pumping out, and that's why, as Matt said, the PS4 Pro a lot better at handling that sort of stuff, even with the limited textures and everything. It's a slave to that hardware. So yeah, I'm like you. I'm kind of excited to see where the new one's going to go with that. I think it's going to be a lot better.
Yeah, and they have said that the PSVR is going to be supported on the PS5. Whether or not they do a hardware revision in a couple of years, I think they probably will. But I think at the moment, they'll probably stick with what they've got.
I think it's going to have to be a massive jump as well with the stuff Oculus are doing with, you know, freestanding VR headsets. And it's, you know, got all of the tracking in the headset. It's not an external camera looking at it. I think that's where they're going to have to go. But they probably need to give people who've spent a lot of money on PSVR a few more years out of it.
Yep, I think so too. All right then, we might come to the end of this rather speculative podcast. Has anyone got anything more they want to say about Sony? Have we missed something? Have we forgotten something? Is there something that you are 100% sure is going to happen? Let me know.
definitely not 100% sure.
No, 100%.
We never touched on the controllers.
Oh, yeah, the new controllers. I like it. I like the design. I'm not necessarily a fan of the white colour, but that doesn't matter. You know, they'll have multiple colours. But I like the new design. I think it'll fit Gigantor hands like mine much better.
I wish they would be really brave and just re-release the original PS3 boomerang.
The Batarang. Yeah. Oh my god.
That's... oh my lord.
Well, this one, funnily enough, is, I guess, closer to that, with nice curved edges and stuff like that. It certainly looks like a more comfortable pad.
I think they'll be fine. I think
slowly getting more towards those, you know, Xbox controller ergonomics.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do like the offset sticks on the Xbox better, but. Mm. I mean, I'll take that form factor. It looks quite comfortable, so.
Yep.
Aside from our glorious editor-in-chief, and Ken, I think, has pretty firmly established how he feels about these new boxes, so I guess it's probably just you and me, Adam. Are you going to get both systems?
Here's a bit of a story for you all. I get every box every time, all the time. I even have an Ouya sitting to my left that's still plugged in and still working. There's no way in hell I won't be getting both unless literally they come out and they say, oh, okay, we're disbanding it a year in, and for whatever reason I still don't have it. And even at that point, you would get one because now it's a relic and that thing's going to be so super rare. So, but absolutely I will. I've got a review games and there's going to be a lot of first-party games on there. We know there will be. Sony's not incompetent. They will release something that's very decent.
Do you have a Virtual Boy?
Oh, dude, I don't. They're so expensive to get, and they're so rare. It's so hard to find them. I think they had like about 28 games on the entire catalog, and I have used one. I got a friend who had one, so I got to try it. Dude, that thing was pretty goddamn impressive for its time. Like, really impressive.
Like the Lynx.
That's my what's the word for it? White whale?
Mm-hmm. White whale, yeah, the Virtual Boy.
Yeah, yeah, the Virtual Boy.
I mean, yeah, I'll be getting both.
Well, your position kind of necessitates it. Yeah. I think you can't exactly turn around to a publisher and say, oh, yeah, nah, sorry, I don't have that one.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, it'd be really nice, Microsoft and Sony, if you wanted to save me a few dollars and fling one my way. But I will be getting both. So, I always find enough value anyway in having both of them.
I don't
have an issue with it. I will probably trade in the kids' current systems, and they'll get my Series X and my PS4 Pro, and I'll use that to help the funding of the newer systems. But yeah, that's probably my plan.
I think I'm just going to go with the PS5 to start, and then I'll see what happens. I just feel really guilty about how unused my Xbox went this generation.
Mm-hmm. I tend to use it a bit more just for the controller, and a lot of the third-party stuff that I've reviewed just happened to turn up on Xbox, you know. So, but yeah, I think it's really exciting, and I think this generation, more than any I can remember, there's going to be stark differences in the consoles, and I think that's kind of exciting, you know. I think that's a really interesting landscape to watch unfold. Whereas they're not competing each other on the same paddock; they're almost making their own fields. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that all plays out. So, Adam, where can we find you on the interwebs? I believe you are one of those streamer-type people.
I am. Yes. So, obviously, you can find me on Twitter, Garfield. That's GHARPHIELD. And I kind of follow that for pretty much everything else. So you can find me on Twitch, same alias. And, gee whiz, that name's starting to get around. I actually had to Google myself the other day. I was like, oh, God, there's quite a few of Garfield out there.
Had to Google himself, people. Had
you
to.
You called the That's fair. I was,
His hand was forced.
I was stroking my ego. No euphemism. And I was just looking at myself like, wow, that's quite
Oh, no, there was
there.
No euphemism there, Adam.
No.
I was just straight up saying it.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yes. All right, Ken. What about you, my fine fellow?
You can find me at Pixel Hunt on Twitter, and I've got a couple of things that just came up on the Play 2 website.
Yes. And Stephen, of course.
Gorath 44,000 on Twitter, and I pop up on Player 2 every now and again. Go and check out my Switch port report of BioShock.
Yes.
If you haven't already.
And I'm obviously Huso81 at Player2AU. I just wanted to quickly mention we've made a couple of little changes to the site. You know, in response to what's happening in the world at the moment, we recognise that Australia has certainly got a poor track record in treating our Indigenous peoples well. So we're going to be trying to do our little bit to, you know, kind of bring attention to that. There is a little blurb that's going to be in front of every article on Player 2 for the foreseeable future, which has some nice handy links to donations towards Indigenous charities or to some educational tools to help learn about what's happening with the Indigenous community in Australia. We're also going to be moving to, you know, just try and be more inclusive where we can. It's our responsibility as a platform holder, I feel, and I'm confident that everyone in Player 2 feels that it's our responsibility to use our platform to improve things where we can, and that is one area Australia desperately needs to improve, and we're not afraid to say that. So when you see it there, please have a read of it, check out some of the resources we're providing, and you know, just at least have a think about what's going on here, because there's a real reason the whole world has kicked up to this, and it's about time it stopped, in my opinion. So, and we need to do our part. So thank you for joining us on this episode of the Player 2 Pixelcast. We will catch you next time with Tim in the hosting chair, and we will be probably talking about Xbox. It's a
likely. Well, we'll be talking about Shenmue and Dreams.
Shenmue and Dreams, Tim is hosting, yes. And we can...